Trent Daugherty, Mickey Ryan, and Don Davenport. This is the 3HL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome in 3HL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery. 4 o'clock hour underway. We will start with Jade Mariotti, who has been kind enough to join us throughout this Last Dance documentary. Jay, one of the journalists on the front lines of covering the Jordan years in Chicago. Now you can follow him on Twitter at Mariotti Sports or the Unmuted podcast, among a whole lot of other outlets where he still contributes. Jay, we've got all 10 episodes in the rear view mirror now. Curious, welcome back to the show, and B, curious to get your final assessment of the product now that you've seen it all.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm exhausted, and I knew this would create a bang, but I had no idea that it would be so relevant to so many young people. And that's what's so encouraging about it. See, I lived through this. I was a young columnist back then in Chicago, and all 8 years, the controversies, the scandals, the joy, I saw it all. And then it disappeared. And then, throughout the last decade, all I heard was LeBron James. LeBron James, he's the new GOAT. Well, I think Michael Jordan heard that also. And I don't think it's any coincidence that in 2016, when the Cavs and LeBron came back to beat Golden State, the very next day, Michael Jordan greenlighted this project. They had been asking him at NBA Entertainment about this footage for years. It had just sat there in cobwebs. And finally, there was a reason for that, and I think everybody saw it these last 5 weekends, that the man is a megalomaniac, and I kind of say that fondly, not at all times fondly, because he could be a bully and a dictator and a tyrant, and I think a lot of people are debating right now, wow, would that form of leadership even work in the year 2020 in sports? But all in all, I think it was a major success. It certainly was for him. He succeeds with this vanity project that elevates his legacy in history. The NBA advances the legacy of the greatest resource they've ever had after he kind of went away for a while. ESPN gets some much-needed oxygen during a pandemic, and a lot of people who weren't exposed to what was so great about Jordan now thoroughly understand it.
Yeah, whether you like him or not, after watching that documentary, you certainly, I think, have to respect him from a competitive, hard work, want to win standpoint. But part of it, and we had kind of talked to you about this early on, about, hey, this is all with MJ's approval. They weren't going to dive deep into some controversial things. Well, Jason Hare, the director, was on with SVP on SportsCenter afterwards, and the only thing I disagreed with him about was his comments. He said, show me one area where we stayed away from something or we decided not to discuss something. You know, MJ never said no to anything that we proposed in these episodes, to which I can say, well, I thought they skimmed over a little bit when it came to the gambling aspect of Michael Jordan. What is your take on them not staying away from something?
I agree with you. I've been saying that all along. And if there's one disappointment I have about this, it's that they let Jordan intimidate them. What else would you expect? This is Michael Jordan. He intimidates everybody. Jason Ayer had to play by Michael Jordan's rules, whether he admits it or not. I don't think he would dare to present, 25 minutes on the gambling. Jordan would have gone ballistic. See, if it were me, I would have trotted out all the notables. Richard Esquinas, who wrote the book, the San Diego sports executive who gambled so much with Jordan and wrote a book about it. I would have gone to Atlantic City and talked to people. I would have made the rounds on the gambling story. Instead, they bobbed their head in and out of it, and Michael said it was a hobby, and David Stern, the late David Stern, said, we looked into it and there was nothing there. Oh, that really? That's it? This is one of the biggest celebrities in the history of planet Earth. Other celebrities certainly don't get away with being short-shrifted when it comes to scandals. My problem playing on basketball or anything like that. I just wonder how he skated from a from an extensive, full-blown investigation by the NBA. And that's and Jason Ayer is wrong if he says, show me a place where we were negligent. Right there, there's one, and the other lesser so would be the lack of activism on the part of Michael Jordan. This is the era of sports activism. Colin Kaepernick would have been an incredible guest on this documentary. I would love to, after everything Kaepernick stood for 2 and 3 years ago, what would he think of Jordan saying, sorry, I'm not an activist, I'm a basketball player? What would Jim Brown have said? Jim Brown was so critical of Jordan when it was all happening 20 years ago. So, yes, this was not a documentary. It was not a piece of journalism. It was a celebration of Michael Jordan. It hit the jackpot during a pandemic. It gave ESPN some life. But when Scott Van Pelt lets Jason Ayer get away with that, I would have a big problem with that.
I will argue with you from the point of I felt like it did humanize Michael Jordan a little bit. I felt like we learned that, like, I mean, the perfect example is the Kerr story with his father, how he never connected emotionally to Michael Jordan with two similar deaths, with their fathers being, how does that happen? I felt like that was very telling on Michael Jordan and his character from an emotional standpoint, that he just didn't have those emotional relationships at all. Is that accurate from covering back then him?
He had to. That was the way, that's how big his celebrity was. He couldn't ever have a conversation with Steve Kerr. Where would it happen? The only time he would see him would be at practice or before a game, maybe at a shoot-around, but everywhere Jordan went, I don't think people understand this. Take today's biggest celebrity on earth, whoever that might be, and it's magnified. I know you'll tell me, well, social media, but that's inward social media. Everything was out front and center when it came to Jordan. And everywhere he went, it was a complete mob scene. Therefore, he couldn't have those relationships. But you're right. I think we saw evidence of a man who is flawed. Hey, we're all flawed, including Michael Jordan. And at that one point, I think it was episode 7, where he's talking about people accusing him of being a tyrant and a bully, and he starts to tear up, and he said, shut down the camera right now. And I think he probably broke down and cried. We've certainly seen him do that any number of times. And I think he is still struggling with this. Deep down, good human being, raised well, but comes off as a complete bully back in the day, the 1990s, where you could get away with that. You couldn't today. And I think that's the struggle of Jordan. I think to this day, he probably wishes that he wouldn't have been so hard on Scott Burrell. He wouldn't have punched Steve Kerr, wouldn't have punched Will Perdue. I'm sure he wishes that, but it's almost, there's this competitive demon inside him. And he had these lists, as you saw, people, his enemies, real or imagined. And he had to check each one off. Brian Russell last night, George Carl, Jeff Van Gundy. He even told me once, I'm putting your column on my refrigerator door, so I guess you could put me on the list. It's mind-boggling. But you saw that same competitive fire in Kobe Bryant. You saw it in Tiger Woods. I just haven't seen it in many. But what do all three of those athletes have in common? They're among the greatest of all time.
Jay Mariotti, our guest. Jay, I'll ask you this, and this is just something I wrote down last night knowing that you were going to come on with us. Do you think Michael Jordan, literally, be like Mike, the GOAT, the greatest, MJ, Air Jordan, do you think Michael Jordan is a happy person?
It sure doesn't seem like it in the documentary. But maybe that's how he derives his happiness, from looking for a challenge. I know a lot of people like that in life. I mean, just watch the TV show Billions. Do you think the main character on Billions is a happy person? No, he's miserable because he's got to conquer the next guy, even though he's got you know, he's one of the five richest guys on earth. I don't relate to that kind of competitiveness. Not many people do. So I don't know if happy is the right word. I think he misses going out and playing basketball and winning a championship, even though he is so far removed from that. And that's why I wonder how, and this may hit your point perfectly, I wonder how he's dealing with owning the Charlotte Hornets, who have done absolutely nothing in his fairly long tenure as an owner. What have they accomplished? Nothing. I think they made the playoffs once or twice. How does this man deal with that as an owner? Does he just say, I can smoke my cigar? I guarantee you, no. He's anytime he has let somebody into that domain of Charlotte, I think it was Wright Thompson at ESPN several years ago, he's miserable there too, because these guys, he can't shoot the basketball for Nicholas Batum or whoever's on that team anymore. I couldn't even tell you. At least he had Kemba Walker at one point. Kemba Walker leaves, and I don't even know who's on that team now. It's got to be just misery for him dealing with this. And so, yeah, I think the ultimate competitor needs competition, and it hasn't been fulfilled in the 21st century. From leaving the Bulls on, Michael Jordan has done nothing but lose.
Jay, got about 45 seconds or a minute or so left. I have to ask you this. There was a lot made at the end by Jordan. He would have signed a one-year deal. He said that's what he was doing. He thinks Scotty would have come back and Kerr would have come back. He thinks everything could have kept going. If they had managed to somehow throw a Hail Mary as an organization and keep that team together, you were there covering that team, would they have won number 7 in a row?
I think so, because Michael Jordan was still at his peak. Remember, there was a lockout the next season, so there was only 50 regular season games, so any concerns about health issues, age issues would have been mitigated. But look, Reinsdorf, no matter what he said last night, did not want to bring this back. It would have required paying ungodly sums of money that he didn't want to pay. It's being blamed on Krause. Krause doesn't make that decision. Reinsdorf does. So the point is kind of moot. But, yes, I think they would have had a heck of a chance of beating the Spurs in the 1999 finals.
Would Scottie Pippen have come back?
I don't think so because, well, that's relative. You realize the Larry Bird exemption, the Bulls own the Bird exemption on everybody, including Scottie. So there was no salary cap in that sense. They could have brought everybody back and spent enormous sums of money, and that's where Reinsdorf comes in. Reinsdorf would not have paid Scottie Pippen. That wasn't going to happen. But, yeah, if Reinsdorf had said, Scottie, we're going to give you a max deal, I think Scottie Pippen would have returned if Michael and Phil were coming back. So, in my mind, it's still on Jerry Reinsdorf, not on anybody else.
Jay, great stuff, man. Thanks for your time and for giving us your perspective. And you were there to see all of it again. People can follow you at Mariotti Sports or the Unmuted podcast, among many other places. Thank you again, sir. We appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.